Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. Our number here in the studio, 303-696-1971. If you live in Aurora, I would love to get your take on this Gaylord Entertainment issue, tax increment financed project, basically a $300 million subsidy to Gaylord Entertainment. I'd love to get your take, 303-696-1971. Don't be shy. Won't bite. And so we spoke with two of my friends who are running for mayor of Aurora, Jude Sandvall and Ryan Frazier. I think there are a total of six candidates in this race. If I heard Ryan correctly, I asked him that question off the air, and I believe he said two Democrats, three Republicans, and a Libertarian. So I encourage all of you to at least vote for one of the Republicans or the Libertarian. We do not want a Democrat winning another race here around the Denver area. Now, again, I'm not going to endorse anybody in this race. I know and like both of these guys. I supported Ryan in his run for Congress. I've known Jude for several years and seen him all over the place. We do a lot of the same political stuff together, met his kids and all that. And I do have to say, though, I'm with Jude on this issue. The tax increment financing of this project, the argument that Ryan Frazier made that, you know, it's new taxes, essentially taxes that, you know, wouldn't otherwise have been generated that end up getting pumped back into the developer to subsidize the development of this project. I think Randall O'Toole lays out the case pretty clearly in his policy analysis. Again, if you Google Randall with one L, O'Toole, and then capital T-I-F, you'll find this policy analysis and explains what TIF is. And there's actually a whole bunch of examples in his document. It's only, 12 or 13 pages. And there are a bunch of examples in here from Colorado. And he explains why this idea that TIF is free money because it just generates new taxes, that the money, you know, from this project is new taxes that goes back. So it's kind of like free money, this kind of magic perpetual motion machine that's just not right. And that, you know, at best, it's probably a zero-sum game, but there are good reasons to think that it's a negative-sum game because some of the things within the project, if people live there, I mean, no one's going to live in the convention center, but the convention center, for example, will need fire protection, it will need water, it will need other things that impinge on the city of Aurora's infrastructure. But the taxes that go up over time from that district won't be used towards that stuff. It'll just go to the private bank account of the developer. And therefore, the city will have additional costs without additional revenue. Now, Ryan said, and I don't know exactly the details here, but that this thing is structured so that not all of the incremental taxes will go back to the developer, and that some of the taxes will go back to the city and perhaps offset some of this problem. But usually it doesn't work out that well. Usually it ends up that the cities around these tax increment financed areas have to either cut services or raise taxes in order to make up for the fact that the TIF district becomes like a little parasite on the surrounding area. So I appreciated Ryan Frazier's honest answer as to the parts of it that he didn't like and the pros and cons as he saw them in his mind. But at the end of the day, he did vote for it. I think it's clear that Jude Sandvall, had he been on the city council in Aurora, would have voted against it and is still against it. Again, I would say, on this, I think Jude is right and I think Ryan is wrong. But I also think these are both my friends. They're both smart guys. They're both principled free market conservatives, and they're both worth a look. If you are a resident of Aurora trying to decide who to vote for mayor, you know, these guys are not hard to reach. They're not hard to contact. You know, get in touch with them. Ask them a question. Quite likely one or both of them will knock on your door anyway, but you can get on their campaign website, send them a question, ask them a question, give them a call, whatever, and see who you like. But I encourage you, whoever you end up voting for in this race, vote for a principled free market conservative or libertarian. Do not vote for a Democrat. If there is anything we've learned in recent years at every level of government, it's that Democrats only know how to spend money. I mean, there are rare exceptions or people who learn an occasional lesson. As Randall O'Toole said, Governor Jerry Brown in California, one of the first things he did when he came into office was to proposed legislation, which Randall said has passed, ending the ability for the state to do more TIF stuff. But again, keep in mind, California just in the 5 years from 2005 to 2010, I guess that's 6 years actually, issued almost $13 billion in TIF bonds. $13 billion. So they're stuck with that anyway, even if they don't issue anymore. Colorado is actually second on the list at $846 million from 2005 to 2010. It's $28 per resident of Colorado in these TIF bonds. So it's a very interesting subject, and I know you start using terms like tax increment financing. It sounds dry and arcane and stuff that only economists would ever want to talk about, and probably not even them. But really, this is a real issue for every citizen of Aurora and Denver. Don't forget, this is a project that is designed basically to compete with Denver's convention center and to compete with many other convention centers in the west of the United States. But as Randall O'Toole noted, we have a glut of convention centers in the United States. It's very hard to argue that we need another one. Now, anyone... a locale such as the town of Aurora might think they're not thinking in terms of what does the country have or need. They're thinking what's good for us, and that's fine. I mean, they should think what's good for us, but they also need to think, in the long run, does this really work? And I guarantee you that members of the city council of the city of Aurora were not shown Randall O'Toole's analysis about this. The other thing that some of these people, I think, have in mind, and I don't want to impugn bad motives to people, but I will. Once this thing is in place, Gaylord is going to have this huge, $300 million subsidy. They're going to know who gave it to them. They're going to know which politicians on the city council in Aurora gave them this subsidy. And so when these people are running for re-election on the city council, or whether they're going to run for higher office someday later, I'm going to want to check the campaign contributions for all of these people who voted yes on this thing forever to see if Gaylord Entertainment or employees of Gaylord Entertainment give them money. Because crony capitalism is part of the game that I really, really don't like. And in fact, just the term crony capitalism annoys me, because it's not capitalism. And it gives opponents of capitalism a way to attack capitalism by calling it, essentially a form of capitalism where it's not. It is much closer to fascism, which is to say an unholy alliance of industry and government, not in the service of free markets, and it is just not something that people should be allowed to think of as real capitalism. So I'm really going to want to watch where campaign contributions go in the future. Right. And the other thing that I would, point out, again, the same way, I mean, people will think about the politics of this. Other politicians will think about this. If they seek campaign contributions, they're going to think, oh, you know what? I don't want to mess with these guys. They'll fund my competition. There's all kinds of bad political things that can happen here. And at the end of the day, I repeat, as I often do, this is not the government's job. As Jude Sandoval said, it is not the government's job to manipulate taxes, to manipulate who gets what of future tax dollars, whether or not someone wants to claim their new tax dollars. It is not the government's job to redistribute current, future, whatever wealth in order to attract what they think are going to be jobs. And Ryan talked about 3,200 jobs. There's different numbers surrounding these things, but I guarantee you most of them at a hotel and convention center will be very low wage, maybe minimum wage jobs. And it's better than not having a job at all. But to me, this is, I was going to say it's questionable at best, but to me, it's not even questionable. It's an inappropriate thing for government to do. And I think at the end of the day or a few years, Aurora may wish they had not won the competition for this. When we come back, we're going to talk about the shaping up battle over the debt ceiling and debt negotiations. We'll be right back after these words on Backbone Radio. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. So, a couple hours ago, there were some more debt talks at the White House between President Obama and quote-unquote top lawmakers. They've adjourned for the evening and after about an hour, and they are going to meet again tomorrow. The president is going to have a news conference tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock our time to discuss the status of the debt talks, and you can just be sure that it will be one bit of misleading BS after one lie, after one bit of partisan propaganda, after another coming out of the mouth of our campaigner in chief, who I don't think has ever said anything honest about our current budget and debt and deficit situation. Now, one thing that I really want to talk to you about here, two things. First of all, the Democrats had brought forward this idea of a really big deal. So instead of talking about a $2 trillion plan, and keep in mind the idea here was that the Republicans have said that they'll raise the debt ceiling, but they want a dollar for dollar cut in spending. So they were talking about a little over $2 trillion or close to $2.5 trillion debt ceiling increase, debt ceiling being the amount of money the federal government is allowed to borrow. And we're going to reach our current debt limit theoretically on August 2nd. So they're talking about, the Democrats brought out this idea, instead of a $2 trillion deal, let's do a $4 trillion deal. Now, the Democrats want to do this for a couple of reasons. First of all, they want to spend as much money as possible for as long as possible. So if they could do a $4 trillion deal, it would let them borrow and spend and borrow and spend and keep the government from having to at least hit this issue again, probably through the 2012 elections. What they're trying to do right now with the little over $2 trillion number is a number that would get just barely through the 2014, what they're trying to do now is to get just barely through the 2012 elections, whereas $4 trillion might get them through the 2014 elections. And make no mistake, this is all about elections. If spending and a debt ceiling were to come up again just before the 2012 election, that would be very bad news for Democrats. So they want to avoid that. But the only way, so they bring up this idea, let's do this big deal, and it makes it sound like they're trying to do something even bigger and more aggressive and more positive for the country than Republicans are. But what they're trying to do is to add a huge amount of taxes into the deal. You know, so maybe, $2.5 trillion of spending cuts, but then $1.5 trillion of taxes or something along those lines. Now, if you Google something called Hauser's Law, Hauser's Law, Hauser's Law, it basically shows that in the U.S., there, regardless of where you set the income tax rate, the actual percentage of GDP that's taken in as income to the government hovers in a fairly tight range around 18.5%. Now, it's dropped a fair bit in the past couple of years because of the big economic downturn. But when the economy is good, smart people with good accountants find ways to avoid paying taxes, often by just delaying the recognition of income. So basically, raising tax rates, it's been proven over and over and over again, does not raise income to the government. So this was something that was at least being talked about, and it seemed like John Boehner may have been of a mind to go along with something like this, which would have been a big mistake. But then yesterday came out the June jobs report. The June jobs report showed a net gain of 18,000 jobs in the month of June, whereas the consensus estimate, depending on where you looked, was roughly in the area of 110,000 jobs. Not only that, but April and May jobs numbers were revised down 44,000 jobs. This number on Friday was a disaster. And of course, everybody knows, and even Barack Obama has said, that you don't raise taxes on anybody during a recession, during bad economic times. And so once this bad jobs report came out, I think it eliminated any wiggle room that Boehner might have had, because I think he was really hearing it from his caucus, absolutely no new taxes, period. Don't forget, 80-something House Republicans out of about 240 or 250, I don't have the number in front of me, are freshmen. These are people who were elected by Tea Parties often in their districts. They are not people who've been here a long time, playing the game, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That is not who these people are. Fully a third of the Republican caucus are people who are not going to go along with this kind of shenanigans. And they already feel like they've been hoodwinked once with the 2011 continuing resolution. Many of you will remember this thing was promoted as having cut tens of billions of dollars, and then depending on the news story and how you want to cut certain cuts and how you want to count certain cuts, some people argued that this thing only cut a few million dollars, and a lot of these conservative Republican freshmen are really, really upset, as they should be. So, John Boehner has promised no new taxes. Mitch McConnell is being very solid on the Senate side, but we don't have the majority in the Senate. The Republicans don't. So we'll see. And they're talking about everything being on the table, but about 70 Democrats sent a letter to the president saying they don't want entitlements on the table at all. And so this thing is, it's not moving in the right direction, if by right direction one would mean towards a deal on actually coming up with an agreement to increase the debt ceiling in return for certain cuts. We will see. We will see. It's going to be very interesting, but you can tell that this remains exceptionally difficult because of the way Democrats are talking. As I was sitting here eating my fast food, as I often do before the radio show, I was watching Fox News, and Representative Xavier Becerra, who is I think chairman or vice chairman of the Democratic Caucus, he's a Democrat from California. He represents Los Angeles. Was on the air after Brett Baer had interviewed Mitch McConnell. He interviewed Representative Becerra. And one thing after another out of his mouth was a far left-wing talking point, which are just total BS. And I want to go through a few of these things with you so that you understand when you hear BS left-wing talking points that you've got the intellectual ammunition to fight back and to tell your friends why this stuff is wrong. There's lots of reasons why this stuff is wrong, but let me just tell you one. One of the absolute favorite myths of the left is that the current debt and deficit was caused by the Bush tax cuts. You've probably heard that over and over and over, either at cocktail parties where liberals are allowed, or else if you watch, you know, Face the Nation, Meet the Press, or any of these shows. Now, the CBO recently did a study. The CBO is hardly a shill for conservatives or anybody else, and their study shows that the Bush tax cuts were responsible for 16% of the swing from surplus to deficit since 2001. The single biggest aspect of the swing was 44% in new spending, and then 28% was what they call corrections, which means they guessed wrong on what the other taxes would bring in, basically because we had a recession. But only 16% of that swing was caused by the Bush tax cuts. And that's not, by a long shot, the biggest error among Democrat talking points. Stay with us. When we come back after these words, I'm going to tell you about more Democrat lies.